Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. Welcome to the new year. This is my first live show for the new decade. And what better way to do it but have one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite guitarists, Muriel Anderson. Welcome back and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
And this is a very, very special show tonight, especially because she has a new, I don't know how to describe it. There's an album in here, but there's a little more to it. It's called Acoustic Chef, and it's a cookbook and album. And the songs, we're going to get into this, the songs apply, the relationship between the songs and the food are significant. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. And let me just explain a little bit. I'm really impressed by the fact that how Muriel, the way she's taking her music and pushing the boundaries of what, you know, it's not just a song or a musical piece. It's not just a CD. She's always kind of pioneered, done something a little bit extra. And a perfect example is her last album, which is a pretty highly acclaimed album called Nightlight Daylight. I'll show you in a minute. It was chosen as one of the top 10 CDs of the decade by Guitar Player magazine, which isn't a thing to take lightly. That's a pretty impressive statement and just kind of shows you the craftsmanship and the musicianship of Muriel. But this is very cool. I want to show you this. This is the album. And if I'm correct, you've applied for a patent or a...
Oh, no, I did a provisional patent way back in 2015, but haven't really...
Well, check this out. Now, I'll see if you can see this. She has LEDs in the CD cover. Check this out. So I'm going to hit this thing, and it should light up. You should see it. That's so cool. And it's still available, but on her website... MurielAnderson.com.
Yep, I'm correct. That's it.
So, and this is a great album anyway. It's a really cool one. So, not to be deterred or to go one step further, she now created what she calls a multi-sensual experience, where you're using more than your ears to experience this whole the whole concept of this album. So. Let me just start with that real quick and how this came about, the concept, because you had mentioned before the show that you had wanted to do this for quite a while, and then how it came to be.
Well, when we tour, people have kind of come to know that I love good food when we tour, and oftentimes we end up in people's homes and playing music and having some of the most fantastic food and really interesting food. And sometimes we're in the kitchen and, you know, we help to cook. And it's all part of the experience. It's the friendships that you make are enhanced by playing music together, and they're enhanced by eating together, and they're enhanced by cooking together. And so it's a quality of life that is built upon many senses. And I don't think that we should leave some of them out when we're talking about, you know, really enjoying life. And so I've been wanting to share this experience that I have when I tour with people and say, well, how do I do this? Well, we could share some of that in the music from all these different countries. So I really try to experience the culture and get some of the real flavor in that music. And so I'm writing in the style of every country that's represented. And I have some special guests in that style. So, for instance, the French song that I have that goes with quiche.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get a real authentic French gypsy jazz player. So I got Django Reinhardt's grandson, Lulu Reinhardt, who's playing on
it.
Oh,
very
cool. I'm so excited that he joined us. He's playing fills on that. And the accordion, there's a beautiful accordion player on the Italian
Rory?
That just Rory Hoffman just plays this gorgeous Italian style that just brings you there. And all of a sudden, you're sitting in your mind, you're sitting there in Italy, and you're tasting that eggplant parmesan, you know. And so that's also I have Brian Allen to do the photography, and he captures the feel of where we are and the foods that are being represented.
Now, the question was, we were talking a little bit before the show. Of course, you did all the photography. The photography, this food, I dare you to thumb through this book and look at the food and not be hungry. You're either sick or you're dead. I mean, the pictures are just beautiful of what you. And then there's some pictures of them, in you know, working behind the scenes in the studio and stuff. But who cooked?
We all do. Yes,
we
Brian and
cook?
I both cook, and sometimes.
And how
I
did
hope.
You get these recipes? Are they your recipes?
Some are my recipes or Brian's. Some come from my family history, which is from Finland, four generations ago.
Mm-hmm.
So from my great grandparents, and I wrote a song in their style of that era.
That's interesting.
As well. And most of them come from our travels. So both from going there, like for instance in Italy, we learned how to make those Italian recipes in Italy, actually, from families. And in Budapest, I thought that the recipe book was done, and completely done, until we went to Budapest. And there I met a young couple, and we went to their home and played music together and cooked over an open fire. We cooked goulash.
Mm.
And after the first taste of this goulash, I said, oh no, I've got to add goulash to the recipe book, which means I have to write a Hungarian tune. And so that's when I wrote Paprika. And found a wonderful Hungarian fiddle player to play with me. Can we play a little cut of that?
Yes, I have that. Let me
take
it so you get an idea. It really is about the music. I know we're talking about food, and that's a whole thing in itself. But here's Paprika. Take a listen. Great. I had to show the goulash, so you guys. And there's a picture here of them cooking it over the open fire, like she was mentioning.
That's from that very first experience, yeah.
That is very, very cool. Now, the so let me ask you this. This is kind of a tangential question, but how many recipes didn't make it into the book? In other words, do we have enough for book two?
There is a book two in our minds, so there, because there are some that didn't make it, and some tunes. Also, I have a wonderful Japanese tune, and you know, I couldn't find just the perfect Japanese recipe, so we're still looking for that perfect Japanese recipe, and I think there is a tour of Japan in our near future, so I think we have to go. I have to go back to Japan, and you know, the first time I was there, I was really, you know, exploring the music there, and then this time I've got to go back and really explore the cuisine.
Well, some of my friends that I worked with at Panasonic from Japan, if you guys know something really good, post it on the All About Guitar, and I'll forward it to her and give her some ideas. So yeah, they used to cook some amazing stuff.
And also, I've never really explored Indian music, and I would love to discover it. It's a whole different world. And so so that's, I think that making some Indian recipes will be a good culprit to really exploring and discovering Indian food. So those are two things that
are you going to get a chance to go to India and that part of the world?
Well, I certainly hope so, because my niece just married into an Indian family, and so I think that we're kind of
a couple of my friends have gone there, and I'm sure if you were there, just being in the country will inspire you, because it's just a whole different world. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like what we're over here, you know, and even Europe, it's a totally different type of environment. Even Asia, for example. I mean, Japan and China, they're unique, and there's some really beautiful things and stuff, but it's a whole different thing. It's kind of interesting.
All right.
So so a little more into the process of it. So you were figuring out, you were writing music to the nationality, the type of the style of music from that country to the that corresponded to the recipe. If it was an Italian recipe, it was going to be an Italian song, basically.
Yes. But sometimes it came the other way around.
Okay.
Because I wrote a tune for my grandparents. I found an old film from 1929. And when we put it on the projector, we realized that that was during Prohibition. And my grandparents had gotten one of the first home movie cameras. So, of course, they took video of their vacation to Canada, where they proceeded to walk into a bar and stagger out, walk into another bar and stagger out. They made the very funny black and white film. And so I said, this black and white silent movie needs its own music. And so I wrote a tune, and I call it A Fine Pickle. So now I've got A Fine Pickle as a brand new tune. So I had to include my mother's pickle recipe.
Oh, very cool.
Yes, so there's one that came the other way around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can play a little bit.
Sure, maybe?
I can do that. Okay. So I'll play a little bit of A Fine Pickle here.
Okay. And then that's a good excuse for me to talk about this guitar and some of the things. We'll kind of get into the gear between the songs. Thank you. Is amazing now, and it feels like a silent movie soundtrack. You got the style, you got the whole. I mean, I was like waiting for the piano. It was like,
well,
it,
actually, in the recording, I have a Dixieland brass band playing with me.
Oh, very cool.
So you've got trombone and tuba in there.
Now, let me ask you, because you're and this is a good example of that. Stylistically, did you have to do a lot of research to write that, or did it just come to you?
No,
or?
It just came to me. I just kind of put myself there mentally, you know, kind of placed myself there. And a lot of this is kind of technique that I learned from Chet Atkins, and a little bit I learned from Leo Kottke, mm-hmm. a little different thumb technique.
But in writing the music in some of the other countries, doing like, you know, a Hungarian tune or Italian tune, did you have to do any kind of research to kind of get the style?
Yes, sometimes I did for the Hungarian tune. A relative of ours had given us a recording of an old, really old-fashioned gypsy band. You know, the Hungarian gypsies,
mm-hmm.
and so really listened to them and kind of gleaned. Well, some of it's this really super schmaltzy kind of thing, and then some of it was the dance kind of thing. So I used a combination of both, and what you heard for that little excerpt was the dance part of it, and then mm-hmm. the other part of it is the more schmaltzy part, and so I kind of captured that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So because it's not easy to emulate those styles, to get that, to catch that flavor.
Oh, what
to me? I mean, I've heard. I come from an Italian family, so I'm familiar with certain stuff. But, I mean, this is pretty broad. There's a lot of different, I mean, globally speaking, there's a lot of different styles here. That's pretty interesting.
That's what makes it fun. I mean, that kind of a big challenge like that is what makes it fun. It pushes you in different directions.
Right.
Discover new things.
And then also, too, how did you decide on how to orchestrate it in terms of the musicians you used, and was a lot of it written out pretty specifically, or did you pretty much let them go at it?
I did it both ways. For the string parts, I wrote out the parts that I wanted for the strings,
mm-hmm.
When I hired a string quartet. And well, for instance, the tune J.S. Baklava, I wrote out the string parts and wrote it in the style of J.S. Bach, and then in the part where it goes into that Greek little section, just happened to be the day I was recording the strings, happened to be the day of the annual Greek festival that inspired the piece to begin with.
Oh, wow.
So after recording the strings, I went out and danced Greek line dances to the live band, and I asked the bouzouki player, hey, would you record in this middle section that goes into 7/8 time? And he says, sure. And so I let him wing it on the bouzouki for the 7/8 time part, and then it goes back into the string quartet.
Do you want to go ahead and play that clip?
Yeah, we'll
play that clip. I have a clip of that, of J.S.
Baklava.
Here you go. Take a listen.
Thank you.
Now, let me ask you something about that. I love that. That's a beautiful piece.
And
there's
you.
A lot going on in there.
A 20-string nylon string harp guitar. So it's got nylon strings in the treble part and the bass, and for the super trebles, it has steel strings.
Okay.
So, but it, I used to...
Okay,
I
that's
think,
what threw me off, because I heard the steel string, and then she's playing basically a classical, the
yeah.
main meat of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but then some in the first part was actually the bouzouki. Too,
okay.
That gave it a little bit of that sound. So it was primarily the nylon strings and the sub basses.
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit, because you have the Super Trebles, which is a new add-on device that you created. And
yeah.
I think we need to take a look at this. And you might want to hold the guitar
up.
That little part clamps on. It comes off, so you can put it on any guitar. You don't have to use it with a... Let me take a picture of that while you're holding it up. You don't have to use it on a harp guitar. You could use it. She could put it on her classical guitar and use it almost on any guitar you want. And it's very. Go ahead and explain it, because it's really cool.
Right. On the recording, I use that in a Finnish tune, because it sounds a lot like the Finnish kantele. So I use it on a regular guitar. But I also use it on the harp guitar to add range. So it... Then you get a huge range from the high notes to the low. And this particular set of strings, I'd asked several builders to make me attachable super trebles. And finally, Lucas Bruner did, and it's now available if you go to brunerguitars.com. It's B-R-U-N-N-E-R. And it's just a little attachment. Comes with a pickup, so you can play live with it on stage.
It's pretty live. I mean, we're not plugged in.
She's
not playing
plugged.
Acoustically.
That
thing is loud.
Yeah.
What's that wood that's the board?
The board is laminate, and he tried several types of wood. So there's actually several different types of fine wood here laminated together to give it strength, and it's very stable. So it took several tries to get it to be just right, and now it's I hardly even tune it. It stays in tune. It's brilliant. So I can do a tune. This is the one that goes. I had mentioned before the French one.
Okay, this is the French one.
You have to imagine a Lula Reinhardt playing here together with me on this. This is a tune that was written in 1951.
Under Paris skies.
That's right. Le ciel de Paris s'envole une chanson. Elle est née d'aujourd'hui dans la queue d'un garçon. Sous le ciel de Paris marchent les hommes roux. Le bonheur se construit sur un effet paru. Sur les ponts de Bercy, un philosophe assis, deux musiciens, quelques bonhommes, puis les gens parmi eux. Sur le ciel de Paris, jusqu'au soir enchanté. L'une des plus pris dans sa vieille cité. Quelques rayons de ciel d'été, l'accordéon, une marinée, l'espoir fleurit au ciel de Paris. Le ciel de Paris a son secret pour lui de Provence Elle était près de notre île de Saint-Louis. On est trop jaloux de ses millions. Il fait grandir sous nous son tonnerre éclatant. Mais le ciel de Paris n'est pas longtemps cruel. Fait pardonner, il a frôlé le conscient.
That's great.
Thank you.
It sounds great. That little that device is it's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about this guitar. This is an unusual guitar because it's made out of graphite.
Yes, and that's only because I flew here today, via San Jose, from Hawaii. And so this is the first Hawaii tour with the second Hawaii tour with a harp guitar. And it was pretty hard on the wood to go spend a couple weeks in Hawaii. So I thought I would bring a completely impervious guitar.
Yeah, there are people that use graphite guitars because if they're in extreme weather, they can handle it, and they don't go out of tune. They're pretty rock solid.
Yes, and I was confident with the super trebles that those would be fine, and they were completely fine, very stable. So that was the purpose for the graphite guitar this time.
Who makes this?
This is made by Emerald, and it's made in
Ireland.
That's right, in Ireland. And my regular harp guitar is the wood harp guitar is made in Portland, Oregon, by Mike Doolin.
Well, okay, Doolin is the one. Is that the classical?
Yes, that's the classical one.
A harp guitar, and that's made in Seattle?
Portland.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Portland.
But there's quite a few builders now of harp guitar, more than there used to be, so I think more and more people are building these instruments.
Yeah, I've seen more at the NAMM show, too, but I've not seen the classical one that you usually play. Mm-hmm. Now, this one's steel string, but she usually plays a classical six string in it. With the drone strings,
yeah,
which is interesting. And then, well, what you heard on that other clip that I played with the classical guitar, it sounds like three different people because the character of each instrument is totally different. So you have the big bass strings, and then you have the classical guitar, and then you have the
steel. Yeah, it's one of the few instruments that has steel and nylon on the same instrument.
Right. Yeah. So, but though this guitar with the steel strings, it's an interesting sound. Yeah. Though I must admit, it must be hard on your nails.
I have to sand my nails frequently. Yes.
Yeah, that's the problem with steel strings in your nails. It goes. Let's talk a little bit about this other guitar that you were playing previously. We might as well get into that right now.
Okay.
While I'm thinking of it, because I will forget. Now, this guitar is your main six string that you use.
It's the main six string I've been touring with, yeah. And
okay.
It's a Camps guitar. The ones I generally record with is the Tierra Negra flamenco. And that's designed by the duo that I have often toured with from Germany.
This is
Negra.
A Blanca, right?
Yes. And I never thought that I would gravitate to a flamenco guitar. But after touring with Tierra Negra, I just really notice that the immediateness of the sound is very nice for all types of music. And so if I'm playing like a Sousa march, I get a lot of the different sounds, you know, the instruments. I'm doing a Stevie Wonder tune, you know, like this. I get a little of the character of that little voice, and get the character of the horns like this.
Thank you.
I'm doing a Japanese tune. That's a different sound yet, isn't it?
People, that is not easy to bend like that on that guitar.
The techniques that I do to kind of capture the feel and the sound of whatever kind of music I want to play.
Yeah, no, I see a lot of guys using more of the flamenco guitars because they cut well live. It really does help. But the way you play, a lot of it's the way you play, but also, too, the guitar is well balanced. It has plenty of depth to it. It doesn't get too boomy.
Yeah.
And it's it's a well-balanced instrument. So this one is a cedar top, if I'm correct, or spruce?
This one is spruce.
And then the back is what?
Cypress.
This is cypress?
Yeah, so it's a very typical, that's your standard flamenco. The cypress, that's the wood that's plentiful and cheap in Spain, historically. Yeah. That's what they...
Now, your negra is... the top is still spruce?
Cedar. Cedar on that. But, you know, if I'm playing bluegrass, I'll go play a Martin dreadnought. You know, and so that's a whole different sound that you want. Well, in fact, there's actually one tune in the new book, in the new CD, Acoustic Chef, that I wanted something to go with the roasted roots medley, mm-hmm. roast root vegetable mm-hmm. medley. And so I thought I would do a roots medley, a medley of roots tunes, and each fiddle tune having something to do with food, starting with Tater Patch. And so for 2 weeks, all I did was flat pick on a flat top, and just to try to get my flat picking chops back, you know.
Yeah.
And we recorded with my very favorite fiddle player, Michael Cleveland, just mm-hmm. great fiddle player. Mike Bubb on the bass, and then on clawhammer banjo, I have Jack Pearson, and we had a great session. And on the way home, there was a traffic jam. I said, what's this traffic jam? Everyone's turning left into the horse barn, and it was the night of the full moon picking party in Nashville. And I just happened to have my Martin guitar and a strap, and I had been flat picking for 3 weeks. And so I turned left into that barn and just played in jam sessions until the cows came home. Do you have that
yes.
pulled up? Play Let a me, little bit of...
This is called the Tater Patch. Here, take a listen. Great. It's you're a great flat picker.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's like totally would not have, from all the other music I've heard, you know, most people with fingers that play with their fingers play with their fingers. They're not as much of a flat picker, but man, you just went to town.
Well, it really helps to be playing with those guys, with Mike Cleveland and Mike Bubb, Jack Pearson. I mean, they inspire you to play. So.
That is really good. That's some good stuff. I love it. That's a Martin?
Yeah.
That was a Martin.
Martin D35.
Now, I'm going to ask you, I want you to go back to this guitar real quick. Yep. So this is a spruce top. What was the back?
Cedar.
That's cypress. A cedar back. And then
Cypress.
And then,
back and size.
And then the Negra was a cedar top. What was the back and size of the Negra? Rosewood?
Or mahogany? Let's see. I have one that's rosewood, and then I actually have one that's cedar. It's a Tierra Negra model, but cedar back and side. So I have one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it could either be... Mm-hmm. All right. So the... that's interesting. The... because those woods would be more like of a classical type, the cedar top with the rosewood.
Yeah, that's more
it's more
classical.
Conventional.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask you is this little device that she has that's she places it on her knee. I've never seen this before.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so cool.
This is a neck up, and the only reason for this is for my back. It just props the guitar up and makes it much easier on the back when you're playing. And you can just sit flat-footed. And
you don't have to have the little footstool.
Don't need a footstool. Don't need to cross your legs, you know, to prop the guitar up in the right position. So it's, you know, anything that you can use to prop the guitar up a little bit.
Now yours would on your right leg. Do you don't when you play strict classical? Do you do it like that?
No, I found that with the neck up, it's actually just as comfortable to have it on the right leg as the left leg.
Mm-hmm.
So. It allows for just a little bit more motion, a little more movement to have it on the right leg.
That is great.
I so mean, I like
the
to way move
it,
when I play.
It does give you brings the guitar up where it's in the proper position, so you're playing relaxed.
I use some of these notes up here. I know there's no money up in these notes here.
That's,
but yeah.
Tommy Tedesco said all the money's below the fifth fret.
Yeah, that's right.
Where all the money is.
Right.
So, but no, that's true. It because. I see how you're playing when you're playing, especially your left hand. It's relaxed. I mean, and you're at the right. It's the right height. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really been helpful over the years.
Right. And you basically now on some of the tunes. Oh, I'm trying to remember the first one we had played. The low E string was tuned down to what, a C or a D?
A D.
A D.
Yeah. Down there.
That is pretty rich. That D, low D.
Yeah.
And that's a Blanca flamenco. It's really clear.
Yeah, you could just by changing the angle of your fingernail and fingertip, you can go from having that bright sound to a pretty rich sound. And I use this kind of guitar for. Tune like this. This is the one that I call The Immigrant. This is inspired by my great-grandparents. So I wrote in kind of an old Finnish waltz. Thank you.
beautiful. What's nice is that it's not too, the bottom end doesn't overpower. It's well balanced. As you're going up and down, you're hitting the middle strings a lot in the melody. It's very consistent. Good. I'm noticing that. That guitar is really balanced.
Well, thanks. It's you know, that's the same guitar that I used to a few minutes ago in playing Superstition. So it's yeah. fun, the really real variety of tone.
No, it's a real versatile guitar, but I think that the using the flamenco guitar, it has a clearer low end. It's brighter. And that's a problem with some of the classicals that I play, especially the Rosewood, some of the Rosewood ones. They get real bottom heavy. They get bottomy. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. What strings are you using?
I use my signature GHS strings. Okay. So I've been really happy with GHS. They intonate beautifully, so they're very pure sounding strings. And I asked if they could make a string that the third string could be just a little bit thinner, so it would be less tubby sounding, more the same sound as the first and second strings. And so they found a titanium alloy that's used, and so now these are signature strings, and they call them Muriel Classics.
And would you consider them a light gauge or a medium gauge or a forte?
You know, yeah, they're the standard gauge that most people use, which is called hard tension. But the sixth string is a little bit harder yet, because that's the one that I take down to detuning, or if I'm playing flamenco, that's the string that I want to really lay into the sixth string. So it's in either case, I'd want a little bit more tension on the sixth string. So that's why that has a little more.
And that doesn't pose any problems on the guitars. You don't like electric guitars. A friend of mine brought over a guitar, and she had like a slinky bottom. The high end strings were really slinky, and the low end were hard. Mm-hmm. Were higher gauge, and it twists the neck a lot of times. You don't have any issues?
No, that. No problems at all with using it in all different guitars. It seems to be a real standard gauge. Mm-hmm. And the electric tension.
You're changing tunings all the time too, so it's not as. But still, that's the guitars are really the balance. Whatever you did it right, because it's a really balanced set. I mean.
Oh, thanks.
You know, it's it would seem sometimes it's. Do you find you have to work to bring out, like, if you're playing a piece where you have middle voices, and that's usually the telltale sign of a really good guitar or a so-so guitar, the middle voices. If you're playing something polyphonic and you're trying to get those middle voices out, it sounds to me like it's pretty effortless.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think of that. They come out very easily. And when I amplify, I play with EQ a little bit. So my concerts that I'm doing this week, I'll be going through both direct and mic. And
oh, really? Then, so you do
so
both?
I do both. Sometimes I get such a great sound out of the direct, I don't need the mic. Other times I'll use a microphone just to bring a little bit of the reality, the realness out of the high end. So I get plenty of really good sound of the low and mids, and then use the mic just to get
now, what's
more high.
The pickup that you're, what's the system you're using on this?
The Camps has their own system that they use.
And preamp, it's all their own thing.
That's all through. And then my other guitars, I get the Rich Barbera pickups, because there's a separate pickup for each string. So it's like having six individual pickups. And that way it can be balanced, so one string isn't louder or softer than the other.
Now, live, what mic do you use? That's an interesting question.
Yes. I have found a CAD microphone. It's designed for cymbals. That's what I use for the guitar mic. It's a small microphone.
Small
and
capsule.
It sounds a lot like the Neumann KM84s. I used to travel with an old Neumann KM84. Disappeared some gig someplace. And then I found the CADs, and it's such a similar sound. They're very easy to tour with.
Is that just to give a little more top and air to it, you get more of the bottom end from the pickup, or does it sound pretty deep?
They both sound pretty. They both sound pretty natural. Yeah, so that's the object.
Because a small capsule, it's interesting. Like, these are pretty big capsules, so that gets the low end of the guitar really well. But I'm surprised that a little capsule like that, it's like a pencil type of microphone, that would get that. That's interesting. Now, let me ask you, when you record, what do you use mic-wise?
I have a wonderful microphone from Germany. It's a stereo Bronner microphone.
Dirk Bronner.
And that's what you use primarily for the guitar?
Yes, I've used that. And now I found a little Sony microphone that I supplement that with. So I have been using the stereo mic plus a little Sony off to the side.
And you use that for both the classical and the harp guitar?
Yes.
And when you do put that mic, the Dirk Bronner, how far? Do you pull it away?
I have it a reasonable distance, so maybe 8 inches away or so. So it's not too far away. So it's 6 to 8 inches away.
And you put it by the 12th fret?
Yes, near the 12th fret.
And it's a stereo mic, right?
Stereo mic,
still included. That's an interesting.
So that's it captures most of what I need to capture. So right. There's a similar kind of sound. We used the Sony mics on the vocals. You know, there's one that we haven't done yet that uses these Sony mics. That is my favorite cut on the entire Acoustic Chef, which is Tuven Horseman.
Okay, let's go ahead and play that, and then explain to me what you were using.
Well,
or do you want to do it now?
Well, maybe we should explain now, because we should tell people, don't turn your radios off, that it's supposed to sound like this.
Okay. All right.
All right. Because this, they're singing, they're doing the Tuven throat singing, which is getting two different sounds out of their voices at the same time. So it's getting this high whistle that's actually a harmonic that's coming out of their throats. And then they're getting this low kind of sound like a sheep there, and that's coming at the same time. And so it's amazing the different kind of things that they're doing with their voices during this. So I tried to write something in their style. And do you have the whole cut of this or the clip?
No, I just have the clip, but okay. It shows it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So all right, take a listen here. That is great. I haven't heard anything like that since Penderecki. But anyway, we're out of time. I knew this would fly by really fast. What I really want to talk about really quickly is this next week of she's going to be playing all around town if you're in the LA area. Thursday, January 16th, she's going to be playing at the House of Blues, Women of Fingerstyle Guitar. And she'll be there at 7 p.m. in It says 8:30 p.m. or is there two sets?
Let's see. There's three sets. I'm playing in the 8:30 set.
The 8:30 set. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she's playing on the 8:30 set at the House of Blues. Then Saturday, January 18th, she's returning to the Ruth B. Shannon Center at Whittier College. And she'll be with Andy McKee.
Andy McKee, I'm really looking forward to Saturday's show. That's going to be great.
That should be fun. Then the 19th.
That's 8 p.m., I believe, right?
Okay, you didn't have a time.
Okay. I think that's maybe 7:30. Sorry, 7:30 p.m.
Well, it says 7:30 and then it says 8 p.m., so usually they're at 8, but I'm not sure. Yeah. So get there at 7:30 to be there early.
Yeah, go to my website, MurielAnderson.com. Yeah. It'll be right there.
And then the 19th, on that's Sunday, she's at the University of Laverne, the Morgan Auditorium International Guitar Concert. And it's 6 p.m. And then the 23rd, the next week, she'll be at the Museum of Making Music in Carlsbad at 7 p.m. So check that out. And then her MurielAnderson.com is her website. Check that out. And you have to get this one that lights up. This is so cool. And Acoustic Chef. And this is just great. I want to thank you guys both for coming down, Brian and Muriel, we only got a few minutes, so what are you going to take us out with?
Okay. First of all, I want to say, if you go to my website, click on the link that says Acoustic Chef, MurielAnderson.com, then click on Acoustic Chef, and you can listen to all the cuts and check out all the recipes right there. So,
oh, very, very cool. Yes. And if you have any leftovers, send them here to me.
Yes.
I'll try them out. Anyway, thank you so much. It's great to have you again on the show. And both of you guys, this is a wonderful project that you guys did, and I look forward to part two.
Okay.
And everybody else, I'm going to let her take us out. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Muriel, take it away.